call to order. Representative Urusto, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Thank you. It has been moved. I've been informed we do have a quorum. It has been moved to approve the minutes. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Anybody opposed? Same sign. All right. Minutes passed. Representative Dill, would you like to come before us and present your bill? Representative Dill moves House File 520 to be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, and Agricultural Finance.
I thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move the DE1 amendment, the 0520 DE1 amendment, to get the bill in the shape that I want it, and that is then the language that we will work on as the entire bill.
Any discussion on DE1 amendment? Seeing none, move to a vote. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Amendment passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is before you because the cost of issuing easements and permits to utility companies for going across land, specifically that's in public, already existing in public right-of-ways, is just essentially a huge burden to payers for different services, electricity, and other right-of-ways that already exist and are being used by companies to provide services to the general public, such as electrical company. And these fees have gone up and up and up and up, and I certainly am not saying that this bill is going to be how it ends up, if it ends up at all. This bill is destined to go to Representative Wagenius's Finance Committee, and this bill would have an impact on the DNR's operations budget because it will take away a significant amount of income from them, and I understand that. I want to deal with this as a policy issue here in this committee, and then the financial end, if we're successful in passing it out of this committee, will be dealt with in other committees. So at this time, I know there are people here that want to testify on this bill and what the impacts are. So if they could come forward.
Thank you, sir. Chair. Welcome. Can you testify or state their name for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joel Johnson. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Rural Electric Association. My association is made up of the 44 distribution co-ops around the state and the 6 generation and transmission co-ops that provide them power. We appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 520. Because we serve rural and very remote areas of around the state, this issue affects our members more than it does other electric utilities. Prior to, up until 2009, this really wasn't an issue for our members, and that's because prior to 2009, the application fee changed for utilities crossing state land and water was just $500. In 2009, an additional supplemental application fee of $1,500 or $1,000 for water and $4,000 for land crossing was added in legislation, increasing the land crossing fee nearly tenfold. I think it's important to note that the fee increase was added relatively late in the legislative process and without a prior hearing, as part of a delete-all amendment for the final omnibus finance bill. In 2010, the supplemental fees were reduced for land crossings to $3,500, but increased to $1,750 for water crossings. These fees are non-refundable, meaning if you're denied or decide not to go through with the project, the cooperative is still on the hook for the cost of the application. If the route crosses both state and state land and water, the cooperative is on the hook for both fees. The application fees are only a part of the fees the a cooperative is forced to pay for a crossing. Once a line is approved, the state then charges a lease or an access fee on top of the application fee, which varies based on whether the line is crossing a trail of some kind, roadway, waterway, how much timber or stumpage will be need to be removed, or how much land is involved. When you look at the service territory of many electric cooperatives, particularly in the northern part of the state, where up to 60 to 70% of the land is owned by the state, this can get quite expensive. It's our contention that the 2009 increase does not reflect reasonable costs for the, for an application, particularly when applied to crossings on road right-of-ways or when a crossing is being renewed. When utilities are placed in the public right-of-way, the cost to the DNR to license these fill out an application or approve an application should be negligible. The Public Road Authority is authorized by law to allow utilities to place facilities in the road right-of-way, and it reviews the placement of the lines and poles so they conform to state law and regulations to protect the public and the environment. In these cases, the DNR is simply duplicating existing work of the Public Road Authority. The Public Road Authority is also required to pay the DNR for an easement for acquisition of the right-of-way in the first place. In addition to the easement fee, the Public Road Authority mitigates any impacts to DNR-protected waters in conjunction with road right-of-way improvements. Adverse impacts to state lands are minimized or eliminated when utilities are located within the road right-of-way. These fees charged to the utilities have the effect of compensating the DNR for easement rights previously paid for by the road authority. We also think charging $3,500 to review a renewable application for an existing line is also excessive. The DNR has expressed concerns over the time and manpower involved in mapping and locating utility lines, particularly those that are underground. However, locating underground infrastructure is the responsibility of Minnesota's Gopher One call system, which is funded by utilities. If the DNR is mapping and locating utilities on its own, it's duplicating work that's already being done. These fee increases have added substantial cost to many electric and telephone cooperatives and their members located in service areas where there is a significant amount of DNR land. In particular, it has become a tremendous burden for members requesting new service as the fees are typically passed on to the individual member. This will become increasingly expensive in areas with extensive DNR trails. We understand that the state continues to face serious budget challenges and that DNR is part of that. However, we also believe that it's important for the legislature to look at the work being done by all the state agencies and determine whether the benefits are worth the cost. Ultimately, these excessive fees are paid for by our members, the residents of rural Minnesota, and we would be happy to work with the DNR to find a less expensive way to accomplish its goals. Thank you for the opportunity, and I can answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Any questions? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question. It sounds like there would be, from your testimony, there would be a concomitant reduction in what users of utilities would pay if these fees go down. Is that what you would expect?
Yes, we would.
Mr. Hope. Johnson.
Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
No worries.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Mr. Johnson, and to you, Representative Dill, for bringing this forward. I'm curious to know, you talk about crossing state land, just from a different perspective, what are the costs incurred for crossing federal lands?
Mr. Johnson.
I don't have that answer for you. I can get it for you, though.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Fabian.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please.
Representative Dill, can you give me some more insight into what happened in 2009, late in the session and so forth? Do you remember anything associated with that?
Representative Dill.
Well, my reelection, actually, 2009, I'm trying to think what year that was and how who was the chair. But anyway, that I recall that was the renewal fee. Representative Guinness, do you recall what the late action was in on it was the renewal fee cost?
I think it would be appropriate to have DNR come and
okay.
and talk about this.
Thank you. Ms. Chair, I'm certain that the DNR is going to be coming up here opposing this bill, so that would be a good question for them.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, I guess I heard substantial costs and tremendous burden. When we deal with numbers, could you try to quantify that for me? I mean, what are we looking at here?
Representative Johnson, or Mr. Johnson, Mr. Chair, excuse me.
I'm sorry, again. Representative Falk, for example, Lake Country Power last year spent over $60,000 on these fees. North Star Electric, which is up in the Lake of the Woods area, is facing, I believe, over 100 renewals this year.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. How many members does the first one was
Lake Country Power.
Lake Country Power have how many?
Mr. Johnson.
A little over 40,000, I believe.
So, Mr. Chairman, go ahead. Mr. Johnson, that'd be at least in that case about $1.33 per. If you have 40,000 members and it was $60,000 in assessments, wouldn't that be about $1.33 per customer?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk. Well, not all of that gets spread over the cost of the entire membership. Much of the cost goes, particularly in new services. Much of that fee is passed on to the individual member.
Representative Pope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, appreciate the clarification there. I'm trying to understand the overall numbers, because if it's strictly related to a particular hookup or a particular interconnection, we can look at that. But we also have to look at the costs that are not part of that are distributed amongst membership of the cooperative. I imagine it's probably some portion, and the overall cost on an individual basis per member is probably not all in all that substantial.
Mr. Johnson?
Just logically assuming.
Mr. Falk, that is probably true. However, it also is, impacts the bottom line on the cooperative, too. And when you're talking, in the case of Lake Country Power, $60,000, that's the salary of a lineman. Or one employee, so it does have an impact on the operations of the cooperative.
Well, I appreciate that. I know that. I mean, one of the things that co-ops have is an advantage. They're not rate regulated by the PUC. They're allowed to basically raise their rates to cover their costs. And I know, they have to be just and prudent, and they are responsible to their boards. And typically I'm questioning whether or not the money that would be going to the DNR is maybe prudent, but I do think we want them to be doing a good job, specifically when it comes to utility lines, and oftentimes there's a lot more than just electric utilities at stake here, so I think it's important that we keep that in context.
Thank you, Representative Falk. Mr. Johnson? Any other questions?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
So a person in your community, Representative Falk, is building a home on a section of land that he owns, and he goes down the right-of-way, and he runs into a piece of land that has been acquired by the LASAMS Outdoor Heritage Council and is under control of the state. And now that has to cross that right-of-way. And he is the only person that's on that section or quarter section. The landowner paid was the one that sold it for conservation purposes. Now he has to pay all these fees to get electricity to a house that may not even be close to the place where the land was. It was sold to the DNR, or if the DNR previously owned that land, because the cost of the assessment, as I understand it, is not paid for by the co-op. It's paid by the person. Is a part of the fee to get the power out there. And for example, in my legislative district in the north, it's not unusual to exceed $100,000 to get electricity to a parcel that's very remotely located. In fact, on a lake that I am familiar with, the homeowners are proposing to build a power line that well exceeds $100,000 to get to their property, but they could go directly across the lake with an underwater power line, which would be very short, never have to interfere with any cutting of trees or making a new right-of-way for an overhead power line. But the DNR won't allow that at this point. I'm working on that. So these fees are generally, and Mr. Johnson, I think you said this, are not something that the co-op absorbs. That's not what we're dealing with in this bill. What we're dealing with is something that people pay, not big companies, not shareholders or people that are thousands and thousands of people grouped together in a co-op. This is about lowering fees for property owners, and what small part of the co-op does catch the end of this in terms of cost, lowering the cost of providing electricity to the others.
Representative Falk?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that, and I think it would just be useful to know which portion, and maybe Mr. Johnson can help provide this to us, of is the responsibility of that person requesting the interconnection versus which part are put into the fixed assets of the entire cooperative that the entire cooperative then bears. And I don't think that we have that number, what that distribution is right now, but there is a breakup. Is that not correct?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, it varies from co-op to co-op. For example, in the case of Beltrami, they'll pay the first $4,500 to hook up a new service. And also the renewal fees would generally be paid for by most of the members, though it does vary from co-op to co-op in the different board policies regarding this.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, can you walk us through what is entailed in a renewal?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, essentially it's the same application, though it's typically nothing is going to be done to the line except to renew the lease for that access.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how often do you have to renew? And I just want to be clear on what are the fees for renewal.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, prior to 1981, the DNR did this on a year-by-year basis. And then beginning in 1981, they were renewed at either 25 years or 50 years. Typically it's on a 25-year basis most often.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Deal, you used the term that people pay for these. Mr. Johnson, can you tell me roughly how much electric rates have gone up in the rural electric network in the state, say, in the last 6, 7, 8 years?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, it's varied around the state. In the northwest part of the state, in your area, I know wholesale electric rates that are sent to the distribution co-ops have increased by about 70% over the last 5 years.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, and people do pay these. And if we can do anything to help keep costs down to consumers, I'm certainly more than willing to take a look at that. One of the last things in the world I would like to see is to have the rate-making ability taken away from our local boards. I think they do an excellent job. Thank you.
Any other questions? Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
You stick around in case there's more questions. Great. I'd like to invite the DNR down. Have the testifiers introduce themselves for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. With me, I have Kathy Lewis, our Deputy Director for the Division of Lands and Minerals. This is a very complicated issue, and Deputy Director Lewis will walk through those issues, but this was really the first piece of the DNR's budget where we, in 2008, under Governor Pawlenty, we looked at where the general fund was subsidizing commercial activity. You'll hear about more of these types of activities as we talk about our budget and it moves forward through the committee process, but the general fund was paying for these activities, subsidizing the installation of these utility easements within public lands. It is also a component related to school trust lands, where some of these dollars go to the school trust, crossing state lands, So it's not as simple as just saying people pay for these fees or they've gone up substantially. And when you talk about the renewals, the permits that were done 25 years ago, 50 years ago, they're almost useless for us right now. We need to record, we need to map, we need to know what's going on. And with that, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd like to have Kathy Lewis describe, actually walk through what the fiscal impacts mean for this position.
Ms. Lewis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Kathy Lewis, DNR Lands and Minerals. The fiscal impact overall is about $700,000 a year. Let me step back and talk a little bit about the different fees. Originally, there was a $500 application fee for the utility license. These are licenses crossing DNR lands and public waters. That money goes to the general fund, and that's not appropriated to the DNR. Back in about 2009, they were looking at the budget situation, and they decided to eliminate general fund appropriation to DNR to handle the utility license work. So there is a new fee, application fee added, and that covers our staff costs to do the application, review the application, draft the license, issue the license. We also have a monitoring fee that we only impose for large-scale projects like the CapEx project, Enbridge, where they're coming in with big pipelines or power lines, and we're out there regularly monitoring the activity on the land, ensuring that they're meeting the environmental requirements in the license and the construction methods that have to be followed in protecting the water and protecting against invasive species. There's a market value fee. It's fairly modest compared to the marketplace. It's for 50 years. And for the water crossing licenses, which are about 200 a year, that goes to the corpus of the permanent school fund. That was a legislative change a few years ago. On the land crossing licenses, it goes to the suspense account for schools, it goes to the university suspense accounts, it goes to game and fish fund, other acquired land types. As to the renewal process, one of the things that was mentioned was this North Star with 100 crossings. It's actually only one license. It's up for renewal. It's 50 years. When the license was issued 50 years ago, there were basically no maps. We're trying to identify for sure where the maps are. We're reviewing for invasive species. We're adopting the new environmental standards for the license and trying to work with the company to get that in effect. But it's only one application fee that they're paying for that 100 crossing license. Also, the issue I should mention is that there's federal aid restrictions on some of the state DNR land, and the federal aid restrictions say that there cannot be an encumbrance without federal aid review, and if you don't get the federal aid review and approval, we can lose federal aid, and it's beyond the federal aid for that parcel. They can have severe penalties if we don't follow that process. I would stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lewis, how many people work in the utility license fee work for the DNR?
Ms. Lewis?
Full-time equivalents.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we have the utility license work is done out of our four regional offices, and we basically have one person each office working on the utility licenses. It's a little heavier in the northern part, but with CapEx, we've been having more work in central. It's a little bit less than that in the south.
Okay. Is that McMahon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so you mentioned it was a $700,000 budget, so I'm just trying to follow that. Then you also mentioned these four people, they do some invasive species work involved with okaying the location of the line, or what was that? I was trying to make. And is that part of their four full-time equivalents work? Are they the ones that are doing the invasive work, or who does that work?
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, the $700,000 is more than the application fee. That's also the fees we get in for the monitoring work, but it's also the fees we get in for the market value fee. So the actual staff work is less than that. The staff, what they do is they identify if there's known invasive species on the property, and we put provisions in our license for the licensee to be taking action to prevent the spread of invasive species. We provide them advice on how to do the work, but we're not doing the invasive species work ourselves. We're trying to train the license holders on how to do to monitor and prevent the spread of invasive species.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lewis, I'm just trying to figure out the connection to this fee. Is some of this money used then for invasive species work? I'm a little confused. Is it actually, I mean, this fee is supposed to be for your dealing with the location of the utility line, most commonly an electric line, but it could be a gas line crossing or whatever. Why are you doing invasive species work to figure out with this line being located? I can't make that connection.
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I do not mean to imply that we're doing the invasive species work. It's what we're, one of the tools we're doing as stewards of the land is to identify conditions on the land and asking the licensee to be working under the conditions on the land. So we're not doing the work ourselves. We're trying to identify that there's some particular, it could be an invasive species issue. We identify areas where we need bird diverters on the property. There's different methods of installation. So there's a whole host of things that we ask the licensee to do to protect the land.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just the last follow-up. Ms. Lewis, I think in the end, we have to justify, if I remember when this issue came forward before, it was the DNR saying that they were not, the fee was not covering your cost to actually do the work on the ground. As Representative Dill talked about, there are instances, and I can think of one where private property went 4 or 5 miles in Representative Dill's district to bring electricity to his house that he didn't have electricity before. I'm not sure how many times he had to cross public land in those crossings, but I'm trying to envision, you know, if he had to pay that fee for all those, that would be a lot of money. And so I just hope that we're substantiating what the actual costs are and not inflating them. I guess that's my concern.
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, we do cost code our time for our staff that we identify it for the actual licenses that we work on. There is some pre-application work our staff does because companies will call us up without an exact license identified, and we work with them on that too. But we have that cost coding information, and we check against our costs versus revenues, and we're balancing out. So we're not, we're assessing a reasonable charge, and we're not making money off of this.
Representative Ogenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned a market value. I imagine that is a lease payment. And then you send some of that money to the school trust and some of the money to the university trust where it's appropriate. That's what I'm hearing, and I'm just trying to clarify if I'm right. And my question would be, when were those rental fees last updated?
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ogenius, the market value fee is a one-time charge for the 50-year use of the state land or the state water. And the on the water crossings, the entire market value fee goes to the corpus of the permanent school fund. For the land crossings, it's based on the land type. The fees are set in rules, and we came to the legislature about the 2008-2009 period and asked the legislature to approve a fee increase. There was opposition to that by the industry, and so the increase that the DNR proposed was modified, decreased by the legislature, but there was an approved increase. Prior to that time, it was about 10 years before that. And then otherwise, the fees are based back for about 50 years ago from when the ones that were renewing. They were very modest fees way back then, and they're still modest.
Senator Guinness?
Mr. Chair, as we have talked, and I think this is a not a question for this committee necessarily, but it is a question for the Finance Committee, is commercial work paying the amount of money it should be paying to the school trust and the university trust land? And I think that's just a question that we don't have to answer here, but I do think that is just one of those questions that sits out there because some of these haven't been updated for years and people think that the school trust should be more heavily funded.
Senator Dill.
Well, thank you, Ms. Chair. I That one I agree on with Representative Wagenius. I mean, we should be charging the appropriate amounts for crossing state land for the use of it. This bill is about the fee to be able to use it, and I want to make sure I got that right. They're two separate issues, correct?
It's other.
Well, sorry, Ms. Weiss.
Mr. Chair, Representative Deal, the way the bill's drafted is all the fees. So it's the application fees, the supplemental application fee, the monitoring fee, and the market value fee. The way the bill is drafted would eliminate all those fees.
Representative Deal?
But that wasn't my question. My question is currently, maybe I didn't make it clear enough, currently under current law, the fee for the use of the land for the 50 years is different than the fee that is charged for the application.
Ms. Weiss?
Mr. Chair, Representative Deal, that is correct.
And so,
Representative Deal?
I said at the beginning of the, when I introduced the bill before us, that this was a something that needed to have some work done on it to figure out where the right costs were, but that wasn't in the purview of the committee, what the right costs were and how they're assessed. And I agree with Representative Wagenius that we maybe have to look at that more often than not with regard to the cost of the use of the land, so that, for example, the university trust, the school trust, and other things are properly reimbursed. But this is about the fees that are charged. And so I took an approach to this that all of the fees would be gotten rid of for the purpose of reevaluating them when they got to the Finance Committee.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lewis, you talked about staff being out and regularly monitoring things that are happening in the right-of-way. We had discussion in committee this morning about different noxious weeds and so forth in the WMAs, and you talked about invasives in the right-of-way. Just so the people are clear, how wide are the right-of-ways, generally speaking?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Lewis.
The right-of-ways are typically 66 feet.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question would be, if we're concerned about possible invasives in the right-of-way, I just want to make sure that we're not holding the lessees to a higher standard than what we're actually holding the state or the DNR with regard to the invasive species. You know, you said if there's things there, you're educating them and what to do and so forth, so they take care of their situation in the right-of-way. In the immediately adjacent property, what is DNR doing to address the same issue?
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I can leave that question to further people to respond to, but we do have guidelines that we've developed for our work with the licensees that we follow with our staff to access the sites and how we clean off the trucks and we brush off the boots. So when we're doing the work with the parties at the site with the licenses, we're following the same procedures we're asking them to follow to make the protection against the spread of invasive species.
Any other questions? Representative Dill.
I'm still not quite sure I've gotten there yet on this invasive species year. In my 11th year, I was not aware that we were charging a utility fee, application fee, and that part of that was the control of invasive species or the recommendation to the landowner on state land how he or she or the company prevents the spread of invasive species. And your question, Representative Fabian, interests me. So what I'd like to know from the DNR is what portion of the $700,000 budget that is relative to these provisions is spent to quantify that and to make recommendations to the landowner. And lastly, I want to make sure I understand that you recommend to them how to control it, or is the DNR's responsibility to control that on private on state land?
Ms. Lewis, two questions there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Deal. For the latter question, it is now a condition in the license on the control of invasive species, so we have an additional a set of instructions of how that they need to be operating on the property, and we inform them on the process for the cleaning of the trucks and the brush and of the boots and those kind of activities. I don't have a breakdown for you on how much time we spend during the application process. It's just one of the aspects that we look at, but it's an important aspect. We look at other environmental aspects too.
Representative Dill or Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Just on this invasive species thing, I mean, that's, if you go out and walk lines, you see that you get the most weeds around where the land has been disturbed to put a bowl in. I mean, that's where you get the weeds, and that's where they blossom and have the seeds to move on. So it's the disturbance areas, no matter how we are doing it, it's the disturbance areas. And I am actually pleased to hear that DNR is working on that, because when we have these wonderfully pristine areas and then disturb them, that's when we open up for things that we don't want.
Senator Fabian, did you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to that point, Representative Wagenius, I have walked the lines, and they make really nice shooting lanes, 66 feet. So thank you.
Representative Dill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear if there are any others that would like to testify for or against it, and then I'm going to have a different motion.
Mr. Meyer, Ms. Lewis, thank you for your testimony today. Is there anybody here in the audience that's interested in testifying on this bill? Anybody in the audience?
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill?
I brought this bill forward knowing that this was quite a scatter, with the amendment particularly, it was quite a scattergun at this issue. And we've had a real robust discussion on this, and there are a lot of new members here that aren't familiar with the issue at all. And it is controversial, it is expensive for the landowner, and people don't understand. I mean, I can't think of the dozens upon dozens and dozens of calls I've gotten since these fees were increases. It's like, what part of out of your mind don't you people understand? Mm-hmm. And with that, what I would like to do at this point is to amend my motion to lay this bill over, and to then I will narrow this down a bit after I find out about this invasive species issue and how much that is being charged out of that amount of money, and then I will come back and ask for the bill. So I think maybe the proper motion is to lay the bill on the table. It's not. My committee administrator is saying no. So what is the, Mr. Chairman?
We're going to lay the, Representative Dill, we're going to lay the bill over.
Very good. Thank you. That is my motion.
This bill is laid over. Representative Russo. Representative Russo moves House File 583 be recommended to pass and be placed onto the General Register. Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill comes from the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and what it does is call for them to work with other groups to establish uniform or standardized, rather, specifications for water quality. You might recall that we recently had on the floor a bill related to drainage issues, and that came out of a similar kind of working group, the drainage work group. So this would, the effect of this bill would be to have Bowser set up a similar group to work on water quality issues. There are quite a number of agencies that get involved in various aspects of water quality, among them the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, also known as Bowser, the DNR, the University of Minnesota does research, and there are a couple of different federal agencies also. If any of you attended the joint hearings that the finance side and the legacy committee had on groundwater issues, you may recall seeing some of the various charts and graphs that came from a number of different agencies, so you've already gotten a taste of how many different kind of fingers in the pie there are on this. One of the excuse me, backing up, if you could take out, you've got in your packet, you've got an example of a similar effort that's been done in the state of Wisconsin, And I'm going to let my colleague from Bowser here explain that to you in a moment. But it's just give you a moment to find that so you have it when he's referring to it. And there's no money attached to this bill. It's felt that for the moment the work would be done as part of the normal course of business for the agencies. And if need be, there are some possible sources of federal grants and such different sources of money that might be brought to bear on this in the future. But for the moment, there's no money being attached to this bill. And with that, I'll let John take over here.
Yeah, John Jashke, is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Your name for the record, and please share.
Yeah, my name is John Jashke, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources, and as Representative Urso described, this bill is setting the stage for things to come later, and she mentioned the water quality aspects that are really important here in Minnesota, and I want to just make sure everyone understands that the focus of this is really about the practices and projects. If you look at line 1.12, you know, it's about using the best information we're getting out of our universities, getting from our practitioners in the private sector who are involved in designing and building a lot of these projects, and using that information to allow us as agencies and others to specify the details of projects in a much more cost-effective and coordinated fashion, because we have, with the legacy amendment in particular, a lot more work to come. Being able to use standardized designs and practices, you know, out of a suite that we have largely already in place but will constantly be evolving and improving is really important, so that we are using that money and using those designs in the most cost-effective manner. So this would set the stage for, as she described, something like we've been doing with the drainage work group, where we get the practitioners, the agencies, the researchers all together and figure out what needs to be done and do it in a coordinated fashion. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Urso, I'm just trying to figure out this. Your bill is actually in the bill that we're going to hear in a minute from Representative Hansen, so it's in twice. And when I read it, it's like, are you really serious that we're going to pass a bill that says this? I mean, they ought to be able to do this tomorrow without having to come here.
Representative McNamara, could you maybe make a clear question, please? I'm not clear about what you're asking, Representative Urso.
Two questions. Why is it in twice, in your bill and in Representative Hansen's?
I'm not responsible for Representative. I'm not responsible for Representative Hansen's bill. But to your other point, I know that we have heard, for example, when we had the joint hearing about water quality and quantity issues in groundwater, each agency has their own mission, and if it doesn't fall within the mission of the agency to do an effort like this, they need to be explicitly told we can do this. And if it's such a small thing, we should be able to do it.
Representative Beckner.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But Representative Urso, if you read what this bill says, and I'm not going to read the five lines because it just says, hey, let's kind of work together.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Urso.
I'm not understanding what the problem with that concept is.
Well,
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, Representative Urso, we have a lot of stuff to do, and we don't need to tell our agencies to get along and get stuff done. If that's what we have to do, I mean, if you want to say do it this way, that, this is just feel-good statements about the agency. I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair, for the director, Director Jashke, if you brought this forward, I'm trying to understand. I would hope that if you want to do this, you'd just go do it.
Mr.
Jashke.
Representative McNamara, we do want to do this, but a couple of things I'd add to the reasons for this. Number one, as was described, you know, many priorities come into our office every day, and we've got to make sure we can sort through those, and this gives it some sense of a priority that we can't ignore, number one. Number two, We have others outside of state government, the federal agencies in particular, that if something isn't state law saying we expect participation, then it happens. If we don't have that, then we just simply keep asking oftentimes. So that's critical, and especially when given the Wisconsin model, and their model is more formal. If it comes to that, we'll have to come back before this body and see if there's ways to accomplish that same formality. But at this point, we believe we can start it, as we have successfully with the drainage work group approach, where we get folks together, and they then, in consensus fashion, bring ideas, recommendations forward to this body if necessary.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Urusso and Mr. Jasky, in there it says that the board shall work with state and federal agencies. We know how much success we've had working with the Army Corps of Engineers, trying to get them to come to the table. What is your plan for making them come to the table?
Senator Russo.
We don't have the means to make the federal government do anything.
Representative Fabian? Oh, sorry, Representative Urusso.
However, when I was sitting through the testimony about groundwater issues, this is exactly the sort of thing that I hoped for at the time. As I watched the testimony coming from different agencies, it seemed to me there was an opportunity to bring agencies together to work together so that we are working toward the same standards, working with the same data, and so on. And so when I have an agency that's volunteering to take charge of that and make it happen, I think that sounds like good government to me.
Senator Fabian, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in there also it talks about academic institutions. What academic institutions are you referring to in your bill, please?
Representative Russo.
It doesn't specify which ones they would need to be. We have a number of fine research institutions in the state. We've already seen examples in the Clean Water Council of some of the data that's come out of the University of Minnesota as they've begun the task of modeling groundwater. So I don't think there'll be any difficulty in finding institutions that would be good candidates to work with.
Senator Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the last sentence, it says the board may convene working groups or working teams. The word may is not very prescriptive, I'll say. Mr. Jasky, can you address that, please?
Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian, as I mentioned before, I believe the best way to get going is to get going on this, and then if we determine that, in fact, something more explicit is needed, then we would come back before this body and seek that more specific approach. If we put in a shall, then you end up with, you know, how often and who, and you know, you end up with some other things that may, at this point, I don't believe be necessary. So we'd like to see success happen and then improve success rather than trying to understand what it's going to look like entirely from the beginning.
Representative Fabian still?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then one last thing. Do we have a template for this? I mean, this, you know, we're talking about bringing in local governments, you know, it might be watershed districts, as we mentioned, and counties and so forth. You know, I'm concerned about having more meetings here in the Twin Cities, bringing people down from far northern Minnesota, adding to their workload, adding to their expenses and so forth. So I have some serious concerns about the bill in general. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, one of the primary endeavors of this would be to save money because if we can develop through consensus fashion standardized templates for practices and projects, we don't have to do each of them from scratch, and that takes time and money both. So that's one of the primary reasons for approaching it that way. I will say the template is, you know, we also have a similar thing going on in Ohio, but Wisconsin, to our east, they actually, Don Ballone, our state conservationist with USDA NRCS, is the one that talked to me about this. And he said that his experience in Wisconsin was that this worked very, very well. We probably won't involve the Corps of Engineers. Maybe that solves the question you asked earlier. We will for sure involve the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Corps of Engineers is doing, you know, large-scale projects that typically are going to require a custom-tailored design each time. This is about the standardized projects for small water retention projects, infiltration projects, waterways, and things like that that we can agree on. incorporate the latest and greatest research and are practically doable, and we can use that template over and over and over again instead of having to redesign it each time we have a project to build.
Mr. Jasky, I just have a question for you. Am I to understand this was an agency-initiated bill?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Is Representative Hansen's also an agency-initiated bill?
That's also correct, Mr. Chairman, and to why they're both in one is because of just timing the way the bills got put together.
My question would be, though, why would you introduce two bills at the same time that say the same words? Literally, they're like cut and paste, and I'm just curious as to why we would be handling it in that way.
Mr. Chairman, it really has to do just with the process for the way bills begin to be developed in the advisor's office, and so Representative Hansen can probably explain that better than I can, because I don't have much to do with it once they go into that process. Mm-hmm. But that's the reason we have two bills with similar language. I believe it's happened before, Mr. Chairman, but I wouldn't be able to pull them out and show them to you.
Representative Uglem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, have a couple of questions about this bill and obviously the duplication that you've just discussed. However, I particularly like the technical standards portion of this bill, because I can see where on each and every one of these little projects and things, if you're developing the technical standards, you're going to end up, instead of reinventing the wheel for every little project, you'll have these standards that you can just plug in and probably save a lot of time and money, engineering, expensive engineering monies on this. So I think the idea, at least a good part of this bill, is good. It's Representative Fabian mentioned the fact that, you know, meetings do cost money, and I think it's important that that everybody realize that. And but you do learn from meetings too, and this is a new process with the technical standards, I'm given to understand, and I think that part of it is a very, very good idea. So I'd just like to commend you with coming up with that thought process.
Mr. Jasky?
Mr. Chairman, and Representative, you know, that's the idea that we're using here. That's the primary driver on this, is that we standardize some of these things that we're going to do many of so that we have a cost-effective approach to it. And then as research that's being done at the University of Minnesota, at MinSCU, even out of state around the country, we take the best ideas and fold those into the practitioners who are going to do those projects so that we have ever-evolving and updated standards and designs.
Are there any other questions? Any other questions? Mr. Jasky, thank you for your testimony today. Do we have anybody from the audience that would like to testify? Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Had not anticipated testifying on this bill or on Representative Hansen's similar language until I started hearing some of the discussion, looking at how it applies in statute. League of Minnesota Cities, for those of you who have not worked with us, is a statewide association, represents all the cities of the state. We have 853 cities in the state right now, and 830 of those are members of the league. The 23 that aren't are all under 100 in population and don't have any public property they are working with or city employees. So I have not met with either author on this or talked with the Board of Water and Soil Resources prior to this hearing, because I really did not see this concern until now. I'll be happy to work with all of them as this is discussed further, because the concern here is that putting in standardized specifications under 103B, which is all the water planning requirements, actually could have a significant impact on cities, because our stormwater projects are federally mandated under a restricted permit. We're regulated under federal law. And any requirements that get put in place under local water planning could ripple onto that, may or may not be consistent with that. Obviously, we would have to work extensively on that. The thing that I think is the most troubling as I look at it is the administration has no money, in fact, actually canceled out recommendations by the Clean Water Council for funding to develop BMPs for stormwater. So there is no money going into developing BMPs that would be appropriate for cities to use to meet these mandates on stormwater, but this could potentially end up with specifications being designed or required for our stormwater programs. So I would like to work with the agency and with other agencies that are involved in stormwater to see how that actually would play out. But I did want to raise that concern on the record for the committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions? Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Tell us a little bit about what you proposed for the stormwater. Did you propose something and it was not recommended by the Clean Water Council? Can you just share with us?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it actually was recommended by the Clean Water Council for $2.1 million per year to actually do the first state-funded research to document efficiency of various stormwater best management practices. State has not put resources into that previously. The governor's recommendations for spending from the Clean Water Fund do not include that, even though the Clean Water Council did recommend it. So we'll get to talk about that more, I'm sure, when we talk about the Clean Water Fund, but that significantly plays into this because there are no resources being put forward by the administration to provide these specifications on stormwater.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any other questions? All right. Thank you for your time. Representative Russo, do you review your motion for House File 583?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Russo renews her motion that House File 583 be recommended to pass and placed in the general register.
Mr. Chair.
Oops. Yeah. Representative McNamara.
I'm going to modify her motion. I'd like to amend her motion that the bill be laid over and the author work with the League of Cities, Bowser, before we send it to the floor. I don't know that this bill is ready to go to the floor. It is in Representative Hansen's bill. I don't know if Representative Hansen's bill is going anywhere else, but this doesn't seem like it's ready to go to the floor, especially with the new rules as far as amendments. I don't know. This may need some more discussion.
Thank you. I'm actually going to ask Representative Dill for some advice on that. What would be the proper way to handle that?
You have to take a vote on it.
Take a vote on the motion amendment? All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. The motion at this point is to be passed and placed in the general register. Am I correct about that?
No.
That
was
I understand. I could either choose to lay it over at that point, is that correct, or we go to a vote on the actual motion by Russo, is that right?
No.
Representative Dill?
Well, thank you, Ms. Chair. Representative McNamara is amending the motion, which is striking her motion and putting a new motion in place to lay the bill over.
Thank you. We're going to vote on Representative McNamara's amendment.
Correct.
Okay.
Can I just...
Representative McNamara.
Clarify, as chair of the committee, Mr. Chair, you could decide just to lay the bill over yourself if you thought that would be appropriate, being that you control the committee. I believe you can pull a bill and just lay it over if you wanted to, but that's what my motion was.
Right. Thank you for your patience as I'm running this process. Representative Fault.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps you should ask the author of the bill what she would like to do with her bill.
That's a really great idea. Representative Russo, do you have any further thoughts in light of the new amendment?
Let me consult with Mr. It would be okay to lay it over so that we can work on that the issue. Thank
House File 583 is laid over. Representative Hansen moves House File 614 be recommended to pass and be placed in the general register. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. To get the bill in the shape I'd like it, and I'd like to move the DE1 amendment to House File 614.
Any discussion on that? Discussion? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Amendment passes.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House File 614 as amended. A few years ago, we established a pesticide, or not a pesticide, but a kind of an evaluation process called PRAP. And this was to look at our water management organizations, whether they're stormwater districts, watershed management organizations, watershed districts, look at effectiveness, kind of coaching districts to make sure things are working. So this is an agency bill that was brought to us. Originally it was to strike the not less than every 5 years because with getting through all of the organizations, sometimes it takes more than 5 years. So I and the chair had talked to the agency and said, well, why don't you say what you mean? And that what they mean is that we would allow not less than every 10 years, but the board has the discretion based on their budget and the operations of the local watershed management organizations whether they would review it. So I think this gives the Board of Water and Soil Resources the flexibility to make sure that they get through the agencies. This is you should have received, I think Mr. Jashke had sent out the latest copy of PRAP, and it is a good evaluation mechanism to bring local watershed water management organizations up to full capacity. And any questions, Mr. Jashke is here.
Mr. Jaskey, please say your name again for the record.
John Jaskey, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources, and as Representative Hansen described, this statute is a responsibility or authority was passed into law in 2007, and there was some funding, a fair amount of funding put towards this, and of course, given the state of the budget and the years subsequent to that, it has not increased. In fact, the opposite. However, we've, as he described, you know, carried this program forward, and we've done a annual evaluation of somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 or 12 local governments each year. We had the choice of either doing it shallow and complete or thorough and not complete, and we chose to be thorough because we felt that if we're going to do an evaluation of performance, we want it to be done well so that both the local governments who are experiencing the review and evaluation are going to get something meaningful out of it, and that the state can be assured that once we've done that, there is something that is going to be able to be improved once we leave. We're asking for this adjustment to the policy here because we aren't able to get to every local government within that five-year period. We believe that the language in the amendment will allow us to take into account a couple of things. One is, of course, budget is a real factor. You've only got so many hours to do this kind of work given the appropriations that are for it. And secondly, we don't need to go to all local governments at the same frequency. Some that are doing a very good job, you know, don't need to go back in 5 years. If you were there recently, that's sufficient. If they've had a problem, we go back more often and follow up. So we need that judgment to be exercised here. We're okay with the 10-year sort of out as a maximum because each of these local governments has a plan that they must review and update, and the state will approve once every 10 years. And so I think that makes sense that we at least get one review in prior to their plan being amended or updated. So that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jeske. I'm going to want us to proceed a little quicker here so we can get to 613 as well and have some time to discuss that. Are there any questions, Representative Hanskin or Mr. Jeske? Any questions?
I renew my motion Hanskin to send it to the General Register.
Okay. Real quick, I want to make sure that we did cover it. If there's any audience, anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this? Anyone? All right. The motion has been renewed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. The bill carries.
And we're going to House File 613. Representative Hansen moves that House File 613 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Hansen to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to get the bill into the shape, I would like to move the A1 amendment. This is House File 614, and I am wanting to include that in House File 613. Both bills are agency bills.
Thank you very much, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen moves with the A1 amendment to House File 613. Any discussion on the amendment? Being none, all opposed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails to your bill as amendment, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This bill, as I mentioned, was as amended, is an agency bill. It will be going, I believe, to taxes. Is that correct?
Correct.
So it has another stop. It includes the bill that we just heard from Representative Urusso. And then it talks about abilities relating to tax levy authority. And I'm going to have Mr. Jashke define the components in Section 2, Section 3, Section 4, and Section 5.
Mr. Chairman, members, Section 2, these are technical amendments. In last year's legislation, there was enactment of a bill that we referred to as the One Watershed, One Plan, a set of amendments. And one thing that was accomplished there was we created a new definition for a comprehensive watershed management plan, which would allow more than one government unit to use the same plan as their water management plan. And that's the definition that's being added in line 1.2 and 1.2, I'm sorry, 1.20, 1.21. So we're just adding that term to the existing law. There's no change in terms of taxing authority here. It's simply using the existing authority to contribute to accomplishing a comprehensive watershed plan if they choose to go that route. On lines 2.2, we're adding that same definition you see on the top of page 2. There's also a deletion on line 1.23 of the word increased. It's sort of a legacy word that was put in place when the statutes were originally passed back in the 1980s. Obviously, there will not be increased costs if they're using a watershed plan. They will simply be having the same costs that they will have to find the means to cover. On Section 3, on line 2.7, this is a technical adjustment. Last year, there was some flexibility given to counties for developing the match that they're required to put forth to get the state funding. There was a very prescriptive levy amount that was described in that previous legislation. And what we're doing here is simply making it clear that the state, in this case Bowser, does not set the levy rate. That's a local decision. We simply set a minimum amount that they would need to generate locally, and then that's the match that they're required to provide to get the state grant. On line 2.20 to 2.23, this is another option provided to local jurisdiction. This applies only in a 7-county metro area. There's this fee that's authorized in existing statute that's referred to in some cases as a deed registration fee. When a property is transacted, I think the number is $5 now is the amount. That fee is dedicated to conservation and natural resource protection projects, and this simply allows that local jurisdiction to use that amount of money that they will generate and have to be a component of a match to a state grant. On line 2.25 in Section 4 through 3.4, this is enacting in codified statute what's been in place now for the past three bienniums in appropriation rider language, and that is allowing the State Board Bowser to allow local soil and water conservation districts to use their funding that they receive from the state in a portion that makes the most sense to leverage federal money where that money is available. We've had this case now in the last several years where the feds have had a lot of money for project dollars, but they have not provided the technical assistance funding. So this allows the soil and water conservation districts to go beyond what was formerly a limit of 20% for that technical assistance on a project, so they can actually leverage more federal money than they would have otherwise been able to with that prior limitation. So that's the language that is all-inclusive of Section 4. And in Section 5, this is another piece of statute that's had some long ago attention but not recent. This provision in 103F was passed in 1980 or thereabouts, and it allows local governments, cities, townships, counties, to have that as planning and zoning authority to adopt a soil loss ordinance. We're encouraging that. So a couple of updates here on line 3.10 and 3.11 are to update the federal agency that provides the primary guide for determining when soil loss is becoming beyond the tolerable limit. And if that federal agency for some reason wasn't able to sustain that effort, then the state could come up with another method that would, you know, replicate that. And then finally, on the last five lines, 3.13 to 3.17, we're linking the soil loss ordinances that local governments have. And we have about four or five of them in southern Minnesota that have adopted them. Fillmore County, Maurer County, Olmsted County are three for sure that I know of adopted a soil loss ordinance to provide the linkage to those local water management plans that we talked about earlier that have been already put in statute and last year were amended to be connected together where it was where the local governments wanted to do that. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the end of my overview.
Anyone have any questions for Mr. Jaski? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's not just for Mr. Jaski, but if I may also direct the author.
Go ahead.
With regards, Representative Hansen, with regards to Section 1, the language that's identical to the previous bill that Representative Urusso had. If there's still concerns about this, are you willing to remove this portion from the bill when it goes to taxes at some point if there's opposition?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, I would commit to work with the League of Cities and others as it makes its path after it leaves this to see if we can affect it as it moves.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I guess I want it a little more definitive than that. If there's still a concern about this, are you willing to pull this section from the bill?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, I will not commit to removing it or to editing it. I will work with the interests and the public interest to look at this bill as it moves forward. But I have not had that discussion with them, and nor has Mr. Jaski, so I will not commit to removing it at this time.
Further questions? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jaski, one of the concerns I have, obviously, is for the local taxpayers. You know, in here, there's some levy changes. I mean, is there the possibility that we're going to have a net increase to local taxpayers as a result of this bill? And if so, how much?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, this does not authorize any adjustments to any levy. That simply says that existing levies, whatever amount that locals have established, can be used to support the implementation of a comprehensive watershed plan if they've joined their forces across county boundaries, for example, and are managing a watershed together.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then maybe I'll clarify just to make sure then that if they determine that in order to be able to do all this, it does require them to raise their local taxes, is that a part of this bill?
Representative Jaski.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
Chairman. Representative Fabian, this does not say anything one way or the other whether they will or won't. Their authorities for them establishing a levy are in this bill as you see it unchanged. And so I'm not quite sure if I can answer your question any better than that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that was I did that poorly. If the expenses are going to increase at the local level, they have to make up for those somehow. And I draw the conclusion to connect the dots that they're going to have to increase their local taxes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Jaski.
Fabian, well, that's possible, but there's also the opportunity to pursue, you know, state funding and other funding that's part of that mix as well. And simply this is setting up the ability for them to leverage the state and federal funding. So I'm not sure if it will, but I suppose in your situation, that's always possible for just about anything.
Representative Isaacson.
Mr. Jaski, if you did not have that authority, what would the result be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it would be something would get undone, or not done, I guess, that they felt was important. If they were pursuing a levy increase, they would have to go to their citizens and explain that to them, and that would be the process that they use locally, and I guess that's the conversation that would take place in the next stop for this bill.
Mm-hmm. And so, in essence, there's a it creates a possibility of an unfunded mandate in terms of responsibilities they have to carry out without the financial ability to do so?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this program, and this one particular part of this bill on page 1, section 2, is a voluntary program, so they are not obligated to do the levy. What they would forego then would be the state funding that would be coming through that program if they did not have a local levy to access the state funding.
Further questions? Group Mayor Finn McGreen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just for clarification for you because I went through some of this on a local level. And right now, as far as I know, there is the authority, and you just referenced it, but to raise the levies, they have to go through the notification process and the public meetings. Would this eliminate the process of the public meeting for the taxpayer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, this would not change any current law regarding public notices and meetings.
Representative Hagbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for Mr. Jasky, and it's very similar to the one that Representative Fabian had. And it is on Section 1, and this is a problematic statement in the Subdivision 16. And it's all inclusive of groups that, it might be hard to get a mutual understanding between all of these different groups. And who are all of these groups? Who are the practitioners, the stakeholders? That could be a lot of different groups. Mm-hmm. I wish Representative Hansen was a little more flexible on, he did say that he'd work with the League of Cities, but Mr. Chairman, I am very, very concerned about this section. It really, I believe that it's not needed in the bill. I'm a little surprised that the agency brought language like this forward that says something like this. I don't quite understand it. I guess my question for Mr. Jasky is, are you willing to jettison Section 1 of this bill in order to move the rest of the bill forward if it becomes problematic?
Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Member Hackbarth, this language is intended to be helpful for the cities and others. It's modeled after a very successful drainage work group that we've led for the last several years. The language is very similar, almost identical. We believe that we can start success and grow success through something like this, and we'll work with Mr. Johnson and others to make sure that that's the way this thing starts out and continues.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I see what you're trying to get at, but I don't know that you can't do that already mm-hmm. without this language in the bill. That's my point. I mean, why would you stick and be so dead set on wanting to have something like this in legislation when it's not really needed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, as I mentioned earlier, it's very helpful, number one, because of the federal agency commitment. They see a state commitment to do this because they have to invest some of their time and resources, as they have already, to coordinate this. And the Wisconsin model is much more formal than this. Now, we believe we can do this without that same level of formality, but having nothing in place mm-hmm. gives us very little to start with when we say, federal partners, please come and work with us and commit some of your resources and expertise to this effort. They'd like to see something more real than just a hope and a prayer.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Jasky, I just don't see us telling, Chairman Dill and I are working with some federal agencies on another issue right now. We can't tell them to do anything. We can't tell them you're going to come in here and do this. If they say no, they're not going to come. We can't force them to come, even if it is in state statute.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to figure this out because we did just lay this issue over once already, and I think that was the appropriate thing to allow it to have more discussion. Representative Hansen, I think it would make sense that we would delete this section right now, let Representative Urusso work on the issue with the League and the and Bowser and get it resolved, and then either add it on, and you probably have both to stop a couple stops, or we can add it on a floor amendment that's bipartisan and signed and get it added back in. If that language probably needs to be tweaked some, and it probably shouldn't be tweaked in taxes or ways and means. It would be more appropriate. It seems if we've already got that other bill still in the purview of this committee, that would be the appropriate thing to do. It would be my hope that we would get it worked out. I don't know that I'm comfortable moving a bill that the League has said is problematic for their members and their concern, and Representative Hackbarth's mentioned some good issues. I would think that maybe we would be better to pull this part out and hopefully can add it back in when it's resolved and we've got consensus on it.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to my colleagues here, I we've been working at trying to get folks to come together around some of these water issues for a long time, and been asking them, you know, can't you guys get along, the old Rodney King thing, right? Can't you just get along? And, hey, what is the matter with putting this language in here that says they're going to try to work together and maybe save taxpayers some money? Come on. This is the thing we need to do here, to get agencies to work together. And, yeah, we button heads with the feds on all kinds of things. But let's make an effort to get out there and work with them on, especially on these water issues, because we have a very successful program in Beltrami County on this. It goes back to my SWCD days. And we got all the groups together that are going to work on road issues and water moving through the township. And by golly, everybody comes out same time. The feds, the state, the county. And we get it done in one visit. We're saving taxpayer dollars. So let's promote that kind of a thing. That's all I'm saying. I think this belongs in here, and I think we should be just going to the media and saying, look at what we're trying to do here, promoting folks getting along, and they're going to work on water issues and save taxpayer dollars.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Purcell, for whom I have great respect. We're not saying that this can't be in here. We're just saying it seems like it needs a little more work. That's all we're trying to do, is work at this a little bit more. You've heard the concerns expressed, whether they're right or wrong, by the league. Let's just sit down and work on this. And you make a good case for what maybe I probably more believe in, is you talked about your watershed district and how they came together and got this done. They didn't have the state telling them to do that either, Representative Purcell. So I respectfully say that let's allow the process to work. We've got a committee. We have another bill with Representative Urusso. It's going to be vetted. It's going to be worked on. That's all I'm saying. Let's not make a decision that we really don't need to make right now. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Morginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment on the language itself, which supports my colleague over there. This doesn't say adapt recommendations for standardized specifications. It says provide recommendations. So it's just recommendations, folks. So I don't get the League of Cities problem, because it's just providing recommendations. Let's try it.
Further questions? Chair renews his motion. Recommend to pass and refer to taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Meeting is adjourned.